Good morning. Welcome to What's Up Boone County. I appreciate you joining us this second weekend in June. It's Preakness weekend. No, it's not Preakness. We already had the Preakness. It's the Belmont, I think. I think that horse that won the Kentucky Derby did not run in the Preakness, but is planning to run in the Belmont. I'm not sure why, but I think the Belmont is this weekend. I'm not a horse guy, you can tell. I didn't even know what race it was, but I'm kind of intrigued by this horse that came out of nowhere and cost just a small amount of money compared to the big operations that generate these hugely valuable horses. So I'm kind of rooting for this horse to win again, but that's not the purpose of our show today. I do appreciate you joining us. We talk to people who live or work in our community or have a job or a hobby or a government position that affects the quality of life in our community. And we've got another one in this week. My longtime friend Mike Spidell, who's the Boone County Veterans Officer, is in to talk about activities in the world of veterans. We were going to do this show a couple weeks ago associated with the Memorial Day weekend, but we got bogged down in scheduling and some other things had to go, so we're a little late, but it's still a timely topic. So, Mike, thanks for being our guest this week on What's Up Boone County.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about you and your family. You've lived along here around here with your wife and children for a long time, haven't you?
Correct. My mother and father were from here. My grandparents were from here. And I've lived here my entire time other than the time I was in the military. And that was mostly spent on the West Coast.
What branch of the military were you in?
I was in the United States Navy, and I served for 7 years. And
what did you do in the Navy?
Well, I was a calibration technician, and I worked on nuclear submarines and basically anything and everything that takes any type of a measurement, whether that's heat related or pressure related or just anything. The submarines have systems on it, and all those systems have to be checked. They just don't take anything for granted. That if a gauge says it's reading 100 pounds, then that has a cycle on it where it's taken out of service and verified the accuracy of that gauge.
Did you have that training and expertise before you joined the Navy, or is that something you learned while in the Navy?
I did. I did not have any. It was actually kind of neat. I have a friend that his name is Rick Cavan, and we was in high school together, and in that year of 1980, when we were getting close to graduation, they took the hostages over there in Iran.
I remember.
And we were on the football team, and we thought, you know what, that's BS. We neither one are in favor of that. So we went over to 38th Street and joined the Navy. And I come home from there, told my mom, I said, hey, I went and joined the Navy on the delayed entry. No, you're not. You go right back over there and tell them.
No. Once you sign up, you're probably in, aren't you?
So, yeah. So we left. We graduated on the 18th of May, and we left on the 6th of June. And he stayed his entire career, made it all the way to Master Chief Petty Officer, which is an E9, the highest that you can go in the enlisted ranks. And I did my first enlistment plus my reserve time and then got out of the military.
Did you enjoy your time in the military? You look back on it and feel like it was a good move?
Well, it's a lot fonder looking back on it than it was when I was actually there. A lot of people say, well, you was on them submarines. How'd you do that? And I said, well, when you're 19 years old, you can do anything. You're not scared of nothing. And now I'm 61 and I'm scared of my own shadow.
Yeah, well, I get it. Well, tell me about your wife and your children.
My wife and children are... Tammy, she runs a beauty shop, owner, manager of a beauty shop here in Lebanon. My boys, I had two boys, they're both grown. Kyle works at, he went to Purdue and got his degree and works in the laboratory at Witham. And my other son, Jeff, works for the Boone County Highway and is a team leader out there and just loves his job. They're both different as night and day. One was always involved in anything that had wheels or tires or a motor, and the other one could care less about any of that.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is. We learn, you know, as we have kids, you know, they are different, and I'm starting to see that already with my own grandchildren, how different they are. So what has been your principal occupation over the years, Mike, since you get out of the Navy?
Well, I worked for 27 or 28 years at Lebanon Fire, but in the process of that, they sent me to paramedic school, and I started out as an EMT and then went to work as a paramedic, and I've been at Witham Health Services as a paramedic and still are employed there as for almost 35 years.
So that's your full-time job.
That's my full-time job.
And you work, your hours are probably irregular, but it's a full-time 40-hour position,
correct,
is it not?
Correct. Yes.
And there's been a lot of requirements for education and training, both in the firefighting and in the EMT emergency management or emergency response activity, hadn't there?
There has been, yes. It's an ongoing, you're never done with school. You're always learning new things. The hospital modality of treatment for this and that changes with the wind.
So how many runs a week do you have as an EMT, would you say?
They have roughly, you know, there's two trucks at Witham, one in Thorntown, one in Jamestown, one in the Anson area. And all of those combined, there's probably over 4,000 runs. So it's easy to have.
That's 4,000 runs in a year.
A year, yeah. It's easy to have on your shift, a 24-hour shift, it's easy to have 6 or 8, maybe 9 runs.
So you typically run work a 24-hour shift and then you're off for a few days?
I kind of have downgraded my position out there some. I'm still a full-time employee, but I work more 12-hour shifts, which don't require me to be overnight as much.
I see.
But I still work 24-hour shifts more.
So you're listening to What's Up Boone County this second weekend in June. We're talking with Mike Spidell, longtime Lebanon resident. And we're going to talk now about why he's here, and that is in his role as the Boone County Veterans Officer. How long have you held that role, Mike?
I started into that in 2014. There was a guy that had the position ahead of me that I worked for at the fire station. His name was Don Campbell, and he had been the service officer for a long, long time. And I kind of helped him on Memorial Weekend put the flags out on the graves, which is quite a task. A little over 3,000 flags get put out in about a 4-day period. A lot of walking in the cemeteries. But
do they have good records of where these people are? I assume they do.
I don't know. I've done it for over 25 years, so I kind of know. We do about 14 cemeteries, and then some of the other people in the Zionsville area and the Jamestown area, they help as well. So it's a lot of just walking and looking at the gravestones.
Well, I appreciate what you do. I know it takes a lot of time. So other than getting involved in activities like that, which are important, what would you say is the principal job of the county veterans officer?
The Veterans Service Officer Program was established a little after World War I, and there's 92 counties in Indiana. There's a certified, licensed veteran service officer in each county. Very few of them have more than one licensed person. Some of the offices have assistants, but they can't actually do the claims and stuff. It is a very needed position. The VA system of claims and disability and pensions and burial benefits and stuff with the widows and there's just a variety of things that the service officer helps with. Some of it's all designed for the veteran to be able to do that themselves, but
it's probably gotten complicated, hasn't it?
Navigating the bureaucracy of the Veterans Affairs is enormous. It is, even for somebody who works in it all the time, it's often one step forward and two backwards.
Well, you know, every time there's an election, you hear conversation about the veterans programs, and they're either inadequate or the veterans are being ignored or not being properly cared for. The veterans hospitals at times have been criticized as being out of date and not adequate. It's all federal money. We're talking about the federal budget.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what I think about it, but I know it's important that we care for our veterans. And, of course, you are at the local, you're at the ground level here, trying to help these guys get what they're entitled to, help them or help their survivors, because
Correct.
These people put in an enormous amount of time and paid tremendous debt to our community for their service, and we ought to give them what they've got coming. But that's where you come in, isn't it?
It is. There's a lot of veterans that, myself included, when they exit the military, they just want to put that behind them in their life, and they want to move on, and they don't really reconnect with Veterans Affairs until later on in their life when a problem presents itself, whether that be, just for example, a hearing disability. You know, a lot of our service members were exposed to weapon noise and machine noise and aircraft noise, and they were fine. And then as they got later on in life, they couldn't hear, you know, and they were always eligible for those disability programs. The problem is they just don't know how to get there. And that's where the service officer comes in. It's like, if you related it to a ladder, we're the very first step up off the ground, the veteran service officer is. And oftentimes what the veteran is asking us to do, we've done many times in the past, or sometimes we haven't done it all, but we have connections. You know, we know the people to call and ask.
Sure.
How do I do this? You know,
well,
the veteran is asking for this.
The first thing that comes to my mind when I hear what you just said is somebody's got to be able to demonstrate with some degree of medical science, I suppose, that the hearing loss is attributable to their service.
Because
my hearing's not any good, or it's not getting good. It's not getting better. It's probably getting worse. And I was never in the military.
Right.
So I couldn't claim that it's a veterans-related problem. And not everybody who was in the military has bad hearing. Or if they do, it's not necessarily because of their service. But
that's
you've
got
to figure that out, don't you?
I do. And there's three things. First, you have to have served honorably. And then you have to have a connection to your service as to what's going on with you. And then you have to prove that whatever you were introduced to, injured by, or exposed to, is still affecting you today. And that's done through medical records. And it's not just as simple as, hey, I can't hear, can I have some extra money
check
for disability? It doesn't work that way.
What?
There's a lot of, for each claim, there's about five different parts to it.
Well, and hearing is just one example.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, you got PTSD, you got all sorts of them that you could list, and I couldn't remember. But the program is there. Now, if a person would be diagnosed as having a hearing problem that's related to his military service, then might he have to go to the VA hospital, or can he get some local audiologist here to assist?
Well, the claim itself calls for evidence to prove what you have, and then they make a determination whether that care, that audiology exam, is done at the VA hospital, or if you've got your own personal evidence to show that you have hearing loss. It's more in your benefit to have it done down there, because they have eyes on to everything, and you don't have to submit all that paperwork.
And who ultimately will make the decision on a claim in the example that we're talking about is hearing loss? Is there a board, or is there a group of people that review these records and make an initial decision?
Right. There is my licensing is through the American Legion, and I went to school for about 6 months to become a licensed service officer. That was kind of Mr. Pence, when he was the governor, changed that. He made some certain jobs that were once just a good old boy, you know, you've done it forever and no requirements, education requirements. The state of Indiana was missing opportunities of grants and federal grants. So he put a stop to that. You had to be a licensed person to be the service officer.
Okay, makes
That's
sense.
That's how I got in the job. The guy that was ahead of me didn't want to go to 6 months of school.
Well, I get it.
So anyway, there's as far as the claim itself, like I said, you have to have been there, you have to prove that what is wrong with you today directly links to your military service. And then that's not the end of it. The end of it is that whatever you were exposed to or happened to you that's linked to your military service is an ongoing thing. I tell the veterans a lot of times it's like this. If you worked for Walmart and you decided that you didn't want to work for Walmart anymore, you wanted to go work someplace else, then Walmart doesn't owe you anything. You chose to change your vocation. And the same way in the military. If you got out of the military and you weren't asked to leave, they didn't take your job from you. You just didn't want to work there anymore. So why is it up to them to pay you benefits unless something happened
Unless there's a problem that you can prove is related to your military service.
Correct.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation with Boone County Veterans Officer Mike Spiedel. We're going to talk about some of the other new programs that are available that might be assistance to our listeners or some of their family members after we take a moment to hear from our sponsors. We're back with What's Up Boone County this second weekend in June, talking to Mike Spiedel, who's our Boone County Veterans Officer. Before I forget, Mike, how'd you get this job? I know Mr. Campbell was your predecessor, but who do you report to and who decides whether you're going to stay in that role other than you and your wife?
Well, each county in each state is required to provide a service officer. They're appointed positions from the county commissioners, and like I said, most counties only have one licensed guy, and I was appointed by the county commissioners in 2014 after the guy that was ahead of me didn't want to do the job anymore.
And is it an annual appointment, pretty much?
It is, it's annual.
And how much time would you estimate, on average, you serve as a veterans officer?
They said when I took the job that I should work 25 hours a week. It's part-time, but I tell you, I do a lot more than that.
Well, I can believe that. So you're up there, you've got an office. Where's your office located?
My office is on the third floor of the Key Bank building, the southwest corner of that floor.
Do you have like a secretary or do you run a one-man operation?
Well, I have a one-man operation, but I have a lady that's in the office next to mine that I tell her she's my secretary.
Well, that's good if she'll help you out.
She doesn't agree with me, but she's she's a good sport about it.
Well, tell me about some of the other newer programs that you're learning about and that people might be interested in.
One of the things that's on the horizon is what they call a new addition to a presumptive list. And that are, what I mean by that is there are claims that have already been through the court system that the veteran only has to prove his eligibility. He doesn't really have to prove that he has the need for this claim if he has the
symptoms.
And they are similar to when they released those presumptive lists for the Vietnam veterans that had exposure to the herbicide Agent Orange. Now they're doing the same for the Gulf War veterans and their exposures over there. Most of them relate to breathing issues because of the burning of the oil fields and the high levels of hydrocarbon smoke that was in the air.
So a lot of people who are veterans and are getting up in age, they may know they've got ailments, but they don't necessarily know whether they're compensable ailments. That's where they need your help and the help of their doctor or some doctor who can identify these conditions and say, hey, this is probably military service related, and you might very well qualify for either compensation or for medical care to address those conditions. Is that kind of how it works?
That's exactly how it works. And I try very hard to stay out of the, oh, yeah, you're eligible or you're not eligible. What I do is tell the veteran, I can assist you with the processing of this claim. And I'm not the guy to say the VA is going to approve this or disapprove this. I am the guy that can tell you how to successfully navigate processing the claim to where they will take a look at what you're asking them.
What about other benefits, like you mentioned earlier about once their military service ends, the compensation theoretically ends? Do people who were veterans, do they get any additional benefits as they get older, whether it be tax benefits or whether it be any sort of compensation once they reach retirement age?
Service-connected veterans do receive some Indiana benefits. One of them, and the best one of them, is a tax break on their property taxes. And then some little nice things, hunting and fishing license and service at the state parks and stuff like that.
Okay. And then, but there is no retirement benefit per se. There's
not unless you retire
pension.
From the military.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that required a longer service than, for example, what you did.
And that money is separate from the Veterans Affairs. That comes from the Department of Defense.
I'm with you.
The pension-related stuff is a separate pocketbook than the Veterans Affairs.
Well, how about survivors' benefits, widows' allowances, things like that? How do those work?
There are possibilities for widows. Most of the service-connected disability ratings are only for the veterans. They are the ones that served, and when their time is done, their benefit goes away. But there's the possibility of what's called DIC, dependent indemnity care, and that relates to if the veteran, his cause of death was directly related to his service connection, then the widows have a possibility of tying into benefits as well.
So they might be able to get some continuing benefits,
correct,
in the form of compensation or in the form of medical care or something like that. How many, roughly how many veterans do we have who you work with here in our county? You have an estimated number?
Well, just a little shy of 3,000. And that stayed pretty close to the same the entire time that I've been on the job, up or down a couple hundred, but mostly right around 3,000. And that's about the average for counties our size.
Okay. So do these people, they have to make sure they're on the list. Of course, the government would still have the record of their service.
Correct.
And you've got good records of who these 3,000 people are.
I do.
And there's access to the information with a computer age. I suppose you can get access easier today than years and years ago, couldn't you?
There's a guy in Peru, Indiana. He's the service up there in Miami County, and he's a retired colonel, and he's very good at collecting data, and that's his, like, hobby. So he presents all this information every year, you know, the amount. What I'm most proud of is there's one that's the percentage of veterans in your county that are service connected, meaning that they were eligible for veterans benefits and now they're tied into those benefits.
So, and what? How are we doing?
We are 22.6% of our veterans are service connected. And when I started on the job, it was about 11%.
So you've theoretically doubled approximately the percentage of veterans who are getting benefits,
right,
that they're eligible for.
Some of that is just hard work, you know, knuckling down and doing what needs to be done to get these guys what they're entitled to.
And they appreciate it, don't
yes.
they? And their families appreciate it, I know, because, I mean, you know, I'm a lawyer. Theoretically, I ought to be able to read these forms and fill out these things, whether it be taxes or benefits or pensions or retirement or Medicare. It is unbelievable how complicated some of this stuff is, and I don't know how the average person can get through it.
Well, I do know that the generation that's filing claims aren't as computer literate as most of the kids that are coming up, that will be coming up in that served in the Middle East. There's a lot of veterans that don't have internet access at all, you know, and they don't want it. So,
well, do you foresee any other changes coming down the road that people might be on the lookout for? Are there any issues that are controversial that some of the Veterans of Affairs advocates are trying to get through Congress, but they so far haven't been successful?
Well, they have. They've pushed for a release of 22 more presumptive cases. And they're basically all have to do with the Middle East and veterans that served in the Gulf Wars over there. But they've also pushed for the service officers to not be part-time status. But counties our size, most of those service officers are just a part-time position.
So if you would go full-time, or stated another way, who pays your salary? Is this a county level, or is this federal money that goes to fund the cost of your office? Do you know?
No, I really don't. I know that they're required to have a service officer, but I don't know whether the money that supports my position comes from the taxpayers or it's federally granted? I don't really know.
Well, it's an interesting question, because that would have an impact upon how anxious our local officials would be to make your position a full-time job. You may or may not be interested in taking it, but if somebody was going to have to do it full-time, then you'd have to have more compensation for
right,
the time
a little
that
more. I really enjoy the job. It's very gratifying to help somebody, and I've been a service guy my whole life. I've worked, you know, as a fireman and as a medic, and I just, that's what I think we're chosen to do, certain things, and that's what I've been chosen to do.
So. Well, other than your service for the fire department and the medic service and the veterans affairs, what else you do for free time? Probably not much.
Not much. We have a piece of property down on Raccoon Lake that we enjoy going to.
Now, where's Raccoon Lake?
It's in Park County.
Okay.
And my mother, she lived like she had nothing. And when she died, she had saved all this money and gave each one of us kids some inheritance money. And a lady that was handling her estate said, hey, I'm not trying to spend your mom's money, but I know of a piece of property down there that your mom would be thrilled. And one thing led to another, and we've been down there 5 years now.
So do you, is it like a little cabin or
yeah,
a little house
like
down
a little
there?
Cabin.
Is it you and your brothers and sisters, or just you?
No, just me. They had their own money, and they spent theirs however they wanted.
Sure. So how often do you get down there?
Well, we try to run around down there, once a week, but we really sometimes don't get down there every
yeah.
weekend.
Are there things to do down in Park County when you're down there for the weekend or visit on a holiday?
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful place. There's all kinds of shops down there. There's the bridge festivals down there in the fall, and we have a pontoon boat that we tool around on the lake, and it's just
I bet it's fun.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, I appreciate your time today. I appreciate you coming in talking about the veterans affairs and the office you run here locally in Boone County and the service you provide to the 3,000 veterans who we have signed up through your operation. And I appreciate your service both in that position and the fire department and the EM emergency medical services field. And I wish you well and hope you'll come back again sometime when we need to spend a little bit of time talking about the veterans, okay?
Thank you. I would also like to say that my office is on the Boone County webpage. You can link to my office, call my phone, make an appointment. I'll call you back, and we'll set an appointment.
That's good.
Where we can talk.
I appreciate you let us know that, because that's people need to know how to get a hold of you. You'll get back to them. So
right.
I'm not sure who we're going to have as our guest next week. I'm going to have a lady coming in here soon named Heather Lusk, who's written a book called The Hidden History of Boone County, which I think you'll find interesting, and we're going to talk to her about what she's learned and her book that's out. We'll have other people in to talk about the goings-on in our community. Hope you have a great June weekend, and we'll see you next week on What's Up Boone County.